DJ, drop a beat.
Not another podcast.
Not another podcast.
Not another podcast.
What the hell is wrong with you people?
Not another podcast.
All right, you primitive screwheads, listen up.
James.
I am sick and tired of everyone telling me I'm confused.
Bryce.
We're reckless, arrogant, stupid dicks.
Big Jim.
Wubba-lubba-dub-dub. That's my catchphrase, remember?
Samantha.
I have one job on this lousy ship. It's stupid, but I'm gonna do it, okay?
Dan.
I don't know who you are, but I have a very particular lack of skills. I will never be able to find you.
Not another podcast.
Hey, welcome to Not Another Podcast. I'm James. I'm with Danny and Travis.
Hola!
Bryce is not here because he's sick and tired of this show. He's finally just shaking us off.
That's
and
okay.
Samantha's not here because she's on a Disney cruise.
She has better shit to do.
The Love Boat.
Soon we'll be making another run.
Yeah. You couldn't see that, but I did the Isaac.
Yes.
Man, they'll be here all week.
It was necessary. Yeah. You're welcome, podcast universe.
So we are just days away from Halloween.
Yeah.
And we're kind of sick of the political shit.
Naturally.
So we thought we'd talk our favorite holiday today.
Yay!
Arbor Christmas. Day!
Fucking trees rule!
No, we talk about Halloween, and I know, Danny, that's one of your favorites.
It has
I know it's
been
mine.
As long as I've been alive.
And I know Travis puts a lot of effort into his costumes when he does dress up.
Yeah, it's hit or miss. I'm one of those people where it's like, I'm either like, man, I'm not going to do anything this year, or I'm going to spend $10,000 and create an actual mech that shoots missiles. There's no middle ground with me. There's not.
It's all or none, yeah, man. All or none.
I think that could be said of all of us.
Yeah.
That's fair. Because
if I don't have the money, I'm not doing anything. But if I'm going to do it, I'm spending all the money.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when I was married and we had stupid amounts of money coming in before we had our kid, we were Christmas people. I mean, she was definitely a Christmas person, and I like Christmas a lot too. So
big fan.
We had five of those big Tupperware, bins.
Oh yeah,
the storage bins. Five of them. For Christmas decorations that, mm-hmm. that went up around the house, right? We had four for Halloween, so we
comparable.
We were right up there, and Halloween, especially grown up and with money, is the best.
Oh fuck
my
yeah,
God! So and I was stupid about it. We would go to the what is it? The temporary Halloween places that what? Is
oh,
it?
The Spirit Halloween Spirit. Stores.
Yeah. We would go there and basically go. We want one of everything. I had animatronics. I had shit that would light up. I had shit that was motion sensitive with sound. I had lasers. I had fog machines. I had zombie pieces that would come up out of the ground, and it, to the point where. If I didn't have at least half a dozen kids terrified, like crying, and their parents trying to push them to the door to get candy, then I didn't do my job right.
That's fair. That's fair.
So, yeah. And then we would also throw big Halloween parties, too. I mean, we were known for that and costume contests and lots of adult stuff. So I had as much interior stuff.
Come on out to Travis's Halloween key party.
Yeah.
Time to get kinky.
We would do Halloween up. I will say that Halloween changes when you get a kid. Halloween then becomes all about the little kid and their experience and a lot of the stuff that normally I would have put out. Now goes away because you don't want to terrify your own kid. Right?
Boo.
When it's other people's kids, it's fine.
Oh,
but
I know, yeah.
Because you have to deal with the nightmares.
I'm actively right. trying to fuck your kid up.
Yeah. But, yeah. So, and then.
But know, I walk my kid out the door with blinders on. Mm-hmm, so she
just, no.
When I worked at the university, I did a lot of Halloween stuff. But then, after I came back here, and I didn't have, you know, a whole lot of social life. I didn't have a lot of friends and anything. So Halloween kind of went by the wayside. You know, it was just I didn't want to like dress up and go out to a bar on my own, and it just felt sad and creepy at that point.
And that's fair. And I think my problem with Halloween over the last few, well, better part of the last decade. So it's like when I was a kid, I took over Halloween as a child. You know, my mom, you know, she would have like the cute witch cardboard cutout she'd plaster to the window or something like that, you know, right, with like the opposable arms and shit. And it's like, that's cute. Yep. So once I got about, I want to say 6 or 7 years old, me and my buddy Drew, we used to take over the house for Halloween. So I had all my old outfits and shit like that. I'd stuff them, put them up on the deck, you know. I had the old Scream outfit, you know. So I fucking dangle that from the roof so it looks like it's flying on the porch, you know. I mean, we got into it really deep. You know, I even made like a cardboard coffin for the deck. I went all out. And then, of course, you know, we'd go out trick-or-treating dressed up in our favorite shit. And for me, it worked out. I know I told you guys this, but for me, it worked out great because my birthday was the next day. So I would go house to house, collect candy, act like a Goomba because, well, I felt like one dressed up. And then I'd come home with this giant hoard of candy, keep myself awake until like fucking midnight or 1 a.m., eating nothing but sugary shit, wake up in the morning with a little bit of a sugar hangover, and I get greeted with presents and fucking cake. And it's like, shit was really good when I was a kid.
Yep.
When I got older and I moved out into my first apartment.
Is this going to be another one of Danny's life has lived the charmed life stories like last week?
Well, it was. It was until I became an adult. So my first apartment, you know, we tried to deck the place up for Halloween. My wife tried to do a big high to do for my birthday and shit like that. So first couple of years we dressed up and we just did goofy shit. I think the second year she lived with me, we actually went out trick-or-treating just for shits and giggles because we thought it'd be funny as fuck. So we did that, and then every year after that, I decided, you know what, screw it. I'm just going to set up a cool display outside. I'm going to carve up some pumpkins, and I'm going to make sure I got a shit ton of candy. That was the year my faith in Halloween started dying, because every year since then, and I am counting from 2007 to current, I have had 3 trick-or-treaters.
Total.
In that many years. And I've always lived in an apartment. So it's like there are kids that live in the apartment that go elsewhere for candy.
Wow.
And, you know, I'm now in a neighborhood now that's full of houses and shit, and I know there are families around here, but the last 3 years that I've been in this place over here on Monroe, fucking nothing. Nothing at all.
And I think we talked about this last year. It really is like this major mistrust. There's no more, like, community anymore.
Right.
So there's no more, oh, we trust our kids to go out into the neighborhood and trick-or-treat.
I don't know about you guys, but I was always chauffeured as a kid. My parents were there with
me. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, all the time. Like, they would stand at the sidewalk as we walk up, get our candy, and then we'd walk to the next house. Yeah. And they were the ones who established the rules.
But it's so much of a hassle now for parents to do that. So they take their kids to the mall, and in 2 hours, they're done because they hit every store, and every store is giving out. See, that's the malls, man.
Well, it's not just malls. I mean, most workplaces do it now. I mean, if you work anywhere like in a corporate building or at least a building that has, I would say, more than 40 employees, right?
Yeah.
They'll set up the little candy stations, and all of the employees can bring their kids down, and they go station to station getting their little candy from each department, and they're done. They do that. They do the mall. You know, if they're two-parent household and they both work, well, there's two workplaces to hit plus a mall, you're done. And I also think that most parents nowadays are watching the sugar intake of their children. So they don't want them to have the giant bag of candy. They're going to have an appropriate amount of candy that will be confiscated at the end of the night and rationed over the course of the month and a half until Christmas, right? It's not that every neighborhood is circumspect, because here's why. Last Halloween, I was the roommate of a guy who owned a house in the Laurelhurst district.
Okay.
I guarantee you motherfuckers were busing their kids to this neighborhood. It wasn't, these were not kids that lived in the Laurelhurst neighborhood. I wish there were hundreds of kids that night.
Oh, man.
But the Laurelhurst neighborhood, first of all, every home is $1 million-plus home, right?
Easily.
Just because of the nature of the neighborhood, how old the houses are, and a lot of them were bought right after the housing bubble and then completely remodeled. But everybody in that neighborhood has money.
Right.
They're not just giving away fun size. They're giving away full size everything.
Yeah.
So again, if you're living, you know, if you're living upper, you know, northeast or southeast, right, in sketchy neighborhoods that you don't want, you're like, okay, let's get the van together. We're going to get five families and we're going to drive down to Laurelhurst and we're going to do the Laurelhurst circuit. So there are still neighborhoods that people will go to, but they're just not the neighborhoods that we probably live in.
Well, and that's just it. It's like, you know, it was one of those things where I started losing my faith of, you know, just Halloween in general, and I started losing my favor of it just because of the lack of trick-or-treaters and how I felt, you know, the new standard for trick-or-treating was. And so I drove actually back to my old neighborhood. Now, when I was a kid, my old neighborhood on Halloween night, there wasn't maybe 20 feet between every family. You know, they were systematically hitting every house down the line. And I wanted to just go back and see if shit was still somewhat the same. Because I knew family still lived there. Always had and probably always will. And the streets were dark. Almost completely dark. I did not see a single fucking Halloween trick-or-treater out. And it was like, what in the actual fuck is going on here? And so I told my wife how kind of disheartening it was for me because it kind of broke my heart. And she's like, well, do you want to go check something out? I was like, fine, I guess, whatever. So we drove to the mall. And we sat down in the mall and I just watched all the little kids. And for like 5 minutes, it made me happy. It was like, okay, so they're still doing it. They're just doing it in a really pussy-ass way. But it's like, that was still like, you know, it was something. It wasn't just, okay, people have completely turned a blind eye to Halloween and just said, fuck it. And the idea of rationing candy, I mean, that defeats half of the fun of it for me because it was like, that's what I looked forward to the most. We never went out with the little plastic, you know, jack-o'-lantern pail or nothing to fill that up. No, we had fucking pillowcases. And those motherfuckers got at least half full by the time we left for the night. And usually we'd stay out until we stopped seeing porch lights. It's like motherfuckers turning their shit off. And so we were just making bank on candy. And so it was like, I've always wanted that. I've always wanted to be the house that they go to. And so it's like last year, I even tried social media allure, and I was showing that I had king-size Kit Kat bars and multiples. It's like, come
on Halloween night. Around your neighborhood, put up signs with arrows that say free candy.
Dude, Josie said the same shit, and I was like, yeah, if they want their children to think that they're going to get abducted, that's a great idea.
No, the children will think free candy, but the parents will
are going to be, fuck no. Yeah, no, she said that, and I started laughing out loud. I was like, that is a horrible idea. You want to make sure we never get a trick-or-treater ever again? I guarantee you that's a good way to do it. And again,
you could put on the sign free candy, kids won't be abducted.
Oh, that's a great idea right there, buddy.
It's a legal disclaimer.
But at the same time, it's always been frustrating for me because, again, it has always been my favorite holiday. This is one of the holidays where when I was a kid, I felt the most free. I felt the most happy when I was doing Halloween because I love everything spooky and scary and shit like that. And that's what I live for. And Halloween was my fucking holiday to shine. And as of the last fucking 12 years or some odd, nothing. And it's just so disheartening. I still love the holiday. And I still want it to be as wonderful as it was. But I haven't figured out how to do that yet. So at this rate, it's like Josie and I, we carve our pumpkins, we still deck out the door beforehand, and we still have a ginormous bag of candy waiting for kids to come by. And I told Josie, I was like, if I get one trick-or-treater this year, he's getting all 500 pieces. All of it. Yes. I'm just going to top his ass off right out the
so
gate.
So I'm going to trick-or-treat at Danny's house this year.
I'm cool with that. I'm sure Bree would have something to say about that, but, you know, so would your body, I'm sure. But, you know, yeah.
Do you think it'll ever come back?
I hope so. I don't think so. I think Halloween will be more of an observed holiday as opposed to an active one.
See, I wonder if it's just like location wise, because I bet you in middle America,
oh dude,
it is like thriving.
I would hope so.
But here in the city, I bet you because we're in a metropolitan area, that's a major.
It's hazardous,
factor, yeah.
But at the same time, go out with your fucking kids. And nothing personal, and now this is just how I feel about it, and
maybe
I'm sure I'm alone on this.
Maybe you should look into, like, volunteering to take out, like, at-risk youth trick-or-treating or something.
It's not a bad idea. It's not a bad idea. But I didn't really want to be the parent. There's a reason I still don't have kids, because, you know, that was a thought. Josie's like, well, we can go trick-or-treating. I was like, I don't want to do that. But, no, it was one of those things where it's like, I tried to think of ways that, you know, we would get better. And again, one of the things I say about Halloween, because one of the biggest arguments I hear is, well, when it falls in the middle of the week, it's really inconvenient, you know, because you got to work the next day.
That's bullshit.
That's my thought, too. It's like, dude, you know when Halloween is. It's not a surprise date. October 31st, every fucking year.
Same day every year.
Put in your vacation for the next day.
Or plan
ahead.
That
day. If you're a swing shift kind of person, try to take Halloween off. Or if you're a day shift person, take the 1st of November off so you can go out, stay out late with your kids, have fun, go to bed, and everybody wakes up the next day.
On paper, yeah, that looks awesome.
I know.
We live in a world now where trying to raise a family, and I'm going to say the average family is a family of four, right?
That's
fair.
It's
probably two parents, two kids, right? They've got rent or mortgage. They probably have two cars. Both work. There's child care, there's school, there's all of the extracurricular activities.
Yeah, taking a day off is not
trying to
super feasible.
It's not, and it's not just the day off. They may or may not have the time off, but at times, too, they have to take time off to do parent-teacher conferences, and they have to take time off when their kid's sick, and they don't have child care. And so
I get it.
They have to bank that
but
stuff.
See, this goes back to what I was saying about building community.
But the other thing, too, is I would say the average family of four, the parents are fucking exhausted all the time. And yeah, is it easier for them to one of them to play rock, paper, scissors to see who drives the kids to the mall for 2 hours? Or do they suck it up and go walk around the neighborhood in the cold for 3 hours while their kids go door to door, not knowing, you know, which house is a good house, which house isn't, believing all the shit the media's told them about how dangerous that now look out for fucking marijuana edibles. First off, who's giving away their marijuana edibles?
No shit!
Because you're a fucking idiot, all right?
Serious,
there
bro.
There are adults that will pay you for that shit, right? Don't
fuck
give
real.
That shit away. But if society has already created a dangerous situation about Halloween, and you are tired all the fucking time, and so you make concessions when it comes to Halloween. You don't have when we were young, I would say yes, our parents were tired, but I also know that money went further then. The cost of housing wasn't the same. The cost of everybody struggled, but I don't think it's a struggle like today's parents do. Part of that is brought on themselves.
Yeah.
Because we weren't enrolled in soccer, piano lessons, tutoring, you know, all of the extracurricular stuff that every kid has to be involved in outside of school, right? We were left to our own devices with our bikes. We maybe played sports at school or were in theater or whatever. But beyond that, we lived in a generation where when we got out of school, if we got our homework done, well, fine. Don't get hurt. Don't break the law. Don't make me beat you.
You know what time dinner is.
Right.
Be back.
Right. Be back for dinner. You know,
when it starts getting dark, right? Get your ass home, you know.
And that meant that our folks didn't have as much responsibility about constantly always being around us and taking care of us. I think...
Yeah, once the 6 o'clock news was done, it was like, okay, put your costumes on, let's go.
Yeah.
Right.
And
they
had the energy to do it.
To some degree, I would agree with that sentiment, but at the same time, I would have to throw up the argument point that my family was a family of 5. And then... You know, at one point we were a family of 4 because of the divorce and shit like that. My parents were run ragged with, you know, the jobs, the house, and all that bullshit. But they had always made the time because they felt Halloween was important. Right. It was something that should be fun
back then,
for us.
Society did place importance on Halloween. And now society is more about... the individuals, right? It's more about what happens within your home, not what happens within community, right?
Right.
So, again, if they take them to work and they go to the candy stations there and maybe they go to the mall and maybe there's a school harvest festival that they have to attend, Halloween's done, right? It's over.
Yeah.
You've done it. You've probably had 1 to 2 costumes for the kids because of the different obligations, and then it's done. But it's not like it used to be. It's not, you know, there's so many more obligations the average family has to take care of now. It, you know, we talked about this about a month and a half ago on our other show. The petition to move Halloween to the last Saturday of the month.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
It's like, no, you can't do that. But
while we're at it, let's put Christmas the last Friday of every month, or December. So, again, at that rate, it's like, you missed the point.
Right.
You missed the ball here. I'm sorry. Yep. That's a swing and a miss, something fierce.
Right.
The day is significant. The date of the day is significant. I mean, and that's one of the things that pisses me off when I heard about that, because it was like, guys, at some point within the span of 5 years, Halloween will fall on a Friday or a Saturday. It kind of does.
Right.
That's a natural order. So once every 5 years, you don't have a fucking excuse.
Right. But it doesn't stop parents from doing both. We want to have a big Halloween party where we invite all of the kids' friends over and they, you know, we can control the environment and we do all of the Halloween stuff and there's a costume contest and you know,
right.
You can have that on the Saturday before Halloween anyway. You still can do that.
Yeah. True.
But then still fucking go trick-or-treat.
Dude, seriously.
Because trick-or-treat is trick-or-treat and that has to happen on Halloween.
It's kind of the foundation stone of the holiday.
Right. The Saturday before Halloween, your doorbell rings and there's 2 kids in costume going trick-or-treat.
Oh, fuck.
You come back Thursday.
No shit.
What the fuck is this? Are your parents at the curb? You bring them up here.
Get your ass up here.
What the fuck are you doing?
Bullshit.
Well, little Billy, he's got so much going
Bullshit.
On Thursday that we decided that we're going to do Halloween on Saturday. So
sounds like Billy
you're
needs a day off from violin class.
And your kid,
you.
Billy should be taken away from you.
Right.
No shit.
Right.
I think he can skip a piano lesson for a fucking holiday where he gets to enjoy being a goddamn child.
But I think it goes back to a larger problem. The larger problem is this, is we're too caught up in
fear?
That day-to-day bullshit. And yes, I will say it's fear-based, because if your kid isn't in every activity, you're afraid that they're not going to get into a good school, or with the too much free time on their hands, they're going to fall into a bad crowd. They're going to do drugs.
They're going to start masturbating, fucking the sleeve of their favorite jacket.
See? And because you're so terrified that your kids are going to not succeed, you work them to death, which works you to death.
Which puts way more stress on them.
You're not concerned about the traditions that make life special.
Exactly.
And Halloween is one of those traditions that make life special.
Yeah.
On the other hand, a lot of these parents fucking spoil their kids.
True.
So Halloween isn't special anymore.
Doubly fair.
Right? Because they get anything they want all the time.
That's fair.
Halloween is just an obligation. You know?
Yeah.
All right.
In our, when we were growing up, we couldn't get anything we wanted all the time.
No.
We couldn't.
Well, Danny could.
We couldn't.
No, I couldn't.
We weren't given candy.
They were just supportive of it.
For candy. Candy was something special. They didn't want us to have sugar all the fucking time.
Right.
You know? So when Halloween came, we knew it was special. Our parents knew it was special. It happens once a year. Yes, you get a bag of candy. Go crazy, kiddo.
Yeah.
You're going to be fine. I know you're going to be fucking hyper for a couple of days.
Yep.
And then, yeah, you've survived on candy for 3 days. Give me the rest. Now I'll dole it out to you, whatever.
Yeah.
Or
right.
I'll take half of it and eat it myself.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure my parents have absconded at least a quarter of my shit.
Of course, there's a parent tax.
Yeah, like, there's always a parent tax.
Oh, yeah. I tried hiding it and shit. It's like, because when I'd bring it home, you know, my bag and I, we'd literally go to bed together, and I'd wake up, and the first thing I'd do is crack one. Yeah. Yep. And for a good week, I would be working on this bag, and then magically it would get really light.
Yep.
And it's like, what in the fuck? And my brain just was like, well, I have been eating a metric ton of this shit, so kind of makes sense. So I just let it go. As an adult, though, I'm like, motherfuckers are jacking my shit.
It's the parent equivalent of us going into their liquor cabinet, drinking it, and then filling it back up with water.
Right, right.
It's the equivalent. It's like... So, yeah, but...
Tit for tat, motherfucker.
but I think now it's messed up. I think we have to, as grown-ups and parents, I think we have to be intentional about saving the holiday.
Yeah, making the time.
And I think that it has to happen in two ways. One, parents have to start reviving the art of trick-or-treating.
Mm-hmm.
And they really do. And here was one of the cool things. I got to go trick-or-treating with my daughter once, right? Just because of the way that the visitation worked out and everything.
Right.
And at the time, they lived in a really nice planned development, you know, neighborhood. And it was one where every parent took their kids out. It was... And I always have to... The like quintessential Halloween for me, in my eyes, is the scene from E.T. where there were just fucking kids everywhere and they were that scene in
crisscrossing the street,
dude.
Was,
seriously, yeah,
that
owning
was
the neighborhood.
Halloween for us growing up, it was right. That's what it looked like going Halloween. But here was the beauty of it: is this is the first one I was going out with the parents, right? Oh my God, did we have shit tons of liquor? There was so much alcohol, I could not believe the amount of alcohol that was disguised. It was in water bottles, jugs, we had a Capri Sun package.
Oh, Jesus.
It was just, we were fucking lit. It was awesome. And whoever isn't going out to
candy for the kids,
groups,
cocktail for the parents.
No shit.
No kidding. Whoever isn't doing this, you're fucking doing it wrong.
That's
no
beautiful.
Wonder you're not into trick or treating. You haven't found the secret.
No shit.
The secret is you're walking around drinking open container, just having a fucking blast.
I love it.
And that was Halloween. And fucking do that.
If,
you know, get together, talk to the other kids at your school or in the neighborhood and go and start planning how you're going to attack the Halloween trick-or-treating night as parents. And you're all of a sudden going to make the time.
Oh, yeah.
You're going to prioritize. Because 3 hours of fucking drinking with your parent group and checking out costumes and going house to... All of a sudden... You get a little bit of reliving what it was like when you were a kid.
And then you take the kids home, you let them watch scary movies and eat their candy, and you go to Cynthia's house for the big adult Halloween party.
You know, and I was actually going to pose a question to
and
you,
it's
boys.
It's great because Cynthia always dresses as a sexy cat.
God damn it, we love you, Cynthia. I don't know you. I had a question, though. Do you think... One of the reasons Halloween has fallen so short in these last decade or so is because the kids that were enjoying Halloween back in the day grew up to still want to enjoy Halloween the way they had it But when they realize that it's not going their way, they just do the adult party thing, or they'll dress up in some stupid outfit.
I actually
and go
think
a fucking party.
It's kind of a combination of all of that. I think it's
I think we
people
had it too
our
good.
Age when they were kids, they remember Halloween through the nostalgic glasses.
Yeah.
Going out and growing up, we hold on to those memories, and it's like we want to do that. But now we're so caught up in social media news and so much. If it bleeds, it leads. And, oh, my God, the world is scary. I'm not taking my kid out there.
Yeah.
There's that on top of Halloween isn't going to be what I remember it because I'm not the one getting the candy.
Right.
And on top of it, these kids have way better costumes than I did. I just had a plastic sheet with Superman's face.
Fuck real.
And fucking Superman's head with a rubber band that broke halfway through, and it
or
didn't
matter.
Or a bed
sheet tied around your neck and your favorite blue t-shirt and your jammy bottoms with Superman logos. Right. That was your
and
shit.
And it didn't matter because you had the big puffy coat on so no one could see it.
Exactly, yeah. And that's the thing, though. It's like, I think one of the things I would love to see is I would love to see parents detach themselves from things like social media and stuff like that around Halloween, only because we do get too caught up in it. And it completely envelops our life these days. You know, it was one of those things where our parents, yeah, they had the 6 o'clock news. And that was it.
Yeah.
And although that kind of touched base on some of the shit that was going on in the world, that was a fraction of the news intake.
The 24-hour news cycle has really destroyed a lot of what
a lot of people's confidence.
Great. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because now they're just inundated with so much bad news.
Exactly.
And the thing is like the 24-hour news has 24 hours to fill. So it's everything that we can find to jack up ratings. How you jack up ratings? Through fear.
Yep. And that's one of the things
you
like
get people scared and they're going to watch our news.
Mm-hmm.
To find out how not to be scared, and we're just going to keep scaring them.
Yep.
I also think that our media, and especially our kids' media, that over the past 20 years, we treat our kids like pussies.
Yep.
And that they're these little snowflakes that we don't want to hurt or do anything that's going to cause them therapy later, right?
Right.
First off, as a parent, I had to come to grips really early on and was reminded of it by the story I told a couple of weeks ago. You're going to fuck up your kid accidentally. It's going to happen, no matter with the best of intention. But we all saw terrifying fucking movies, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
At ages that were not appropriate for us to be seeing terrifying fucking movies. How old were you when you saw your first true horror movie?
8. That was The Exorcist.
I was so young, I can't remember how old I was.
In fairness, I did watch Nightmare on Elm Street, Dream Child, when I was like 5 and 6, but it was the pirated version from TV. So a lot of
the good stuff was cut out.
A lot of the really good stuff was cut out. I mean, the whole story concept was there, and you still saw Freddy as the monster he was. But a lot of the gory, nasty, you know, violent shit that was in it was edited out for TV. So it wasn't until I was in high school that I actually watched the unedited version of Dream Child, and I was like, this is way fucking cooler than I remember. But yeah, The Exorcist was 8 years old.
8 years old for The Exorcist, and you were too young. But,
I think it was like 6, maybe.
But in fairness, my standards of horror movies were different, because although I grew up watching Bela Lugosi's Dracula, I also grew up watching Gremlins, and for me, that shit was hilarious. It wasn't scary at all. It was just fucking hilarious.
But you were exposed to it, and whatever your foundation was allowed you to disconnect from it enough to know that it was a movie, that it was fake, that it was...
Exorcist took a couple of viewings to get to that point, but yes.
Well, I mean, there were adults that still are haunted by the fucking Exorcist.
I'm not gonna lie. Well, that was the thing. I watched it at night with my mom, right around Halloween
that
time.
That crab walk scene really fucked.
Okay,
people
that
up.
Didn't come out until I was in high school.
Yeah.
But it was one of those things where it's like the core old school movie. We watched it around Halloween time, and it was at night. And I lived on the second floor of our house, and there was no fucking way I was going upstairs. So
and
I ended up sleeping on the couch.
It was none of the Linda Blair shit because that was scary.
Oh yeah.
There was this demon face that would just
the one
in,
pop up, yeah,
pop in and pop out.
Uh huh.
That fucking haunted my shit.
And
that,
the thing
that,
about it was
with the white face,
the
big red teeth,
and gone.
Yeah.
And so I want to say I was probably 9 and I saw Halloween. It had come out 2 years before and it had just been released on video and they rented it. And, yeah, kiddo, if you think you're up for it, okay, just know it's scary. And
how can it be scary? It's Halloween.
Right. Coats. And it did. It fucking scarred me. It terrified me. I was 8. But it was a movie, and I couldn't wait to see another one. I couldn't wait to when Friday the 13th came out. I had to see that when the original Nightmare on Elm Street came out. That was my absolute favorite, and I love Freddy Krueger, and I had the poster.
Hell yeah.
I had the movie poster over my bed. If Nancy doesn't wake up screaming, she won't wake up at all. But it was a pastime for us. It was like a thrill ride for us. It was like Disneyland. It
was
an adrenaline rush. And our parents, who probably should have had us taken away for letting us watch them at that age, were also smart enough to go,
it's a
fake.
Movie.
It's a movie. This is acting.
This is
that's
just
fake
a storytelling.
Blood. This is not, they're not real. There is no Michael Myers. There is
somewhere
no
between
Krueger.
Their generation and ours, we really became pussies as parents. Our parents, as much as some of us may hate them or not like what they did, they treated us well. They prepared us well for adulthood. But somehow we went, no, I'm not going to do what my parents did, and I'm gonna protect my child. And we're now raising a generation
because
of kids who are not going to be prepared for the realities of the world.
Because there were very real things that our parents didn't do in raising us that actually did come back to bite us as adults, that did fuck us up. The problem was we so overcompensated for their failings that we went into, and it's not, okay, it might be your guys' generation because I'm a little bit older than you, right? You are on this weird,
grandpa.
How old are you guys?
I'm 45.
And you're?
I'm fixing to turn 34.
Okay, so you are on the cusp of Gen X millennial, right? You're a genennial. And
I'm actually a zenial by definition.
You're just on that cusp of millennial.
I am just before millennial because the way I grew up was before the internet and shit like that.
I'm at the latter half of Gen X.
And
but not quite Gen Z.
You mean not quite millennial because there's Gen X, there's Gen Y, which ultimately is millennial, and then Gen Z is post-millennial, right?
Yeah.
So like the students that I was dealing with at the university were probably either tail end millennial or early Gen Z, right? So it goes X, millennial, Gen Z, right?
Fucking hate the title of millennial.
Us Xers, right? we're a super tiny generation.
Yeah.
We are this tiny sandwich between the boomers and the millennials. The millennials, boomers were the biggest generation ever, right, in the history of the world until the millennials came along, and that is far and away bigger than the boomers. But the Xers are this tiny little group, right? Now, we had the best of both worlds. We had the brilliant Halloweens, and we had the horror movies, and we had the ability to jump on our bike when we got home from school and be gone for 6 hours and our parents not freak out one bit about it.
Yep.
We also were the ones that first started getting into computers, first started to get into video games, first started to and saw and have seen all of that rise up, right? So we were the earliest of the adopters. Then the millennials come on, and they're born into a world that is really late boomers and Xers who had kids early, right?
Right.
So that's really who the millennials are. So us Xers are the ones that created the millennials, right? And the early millennials, you saw, that's really where the trophy for just showing up started, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We started because we felt like we were neglected. Where we, now we look back on it as, God damn, we had the freedom to jump on our bike. We had, you know, our parents let us go. No. Our parents didn't give a shit about us. and they didn't have us in their hair the whole time. And they thought, because of the way that they were raised, that they were, that our parents were fucking selfish. And they still wanted their lives to lead. And they wanted their alcoholism. And look, they paid for the roof over our head and the food and the clothes on our back and made sure we went to school and we didn't die and they fed us and shit, right? But beyond that, we were the latchkey generation, right? And our way for making up for that was, well, our kids are going to know that we love them and that we're there for them all the time.
This smothering over-supportiveness, I think, is detrimental to our evolution as humanity, because at some point, your kid is going to be on their own.
But
they're going to have to take care of themselves. Yeah, right. And so the more you push...
Right. I think the pendulum is going to swing back with millennials.
I kind of hope it does.
It's going to swing back with Zs, because here's what happened, right? The earliest of the millennials,
right?
They were the ones that got the trophy for showing up, right? But they had kids. Those kids, those millennials, became what are now known as helicopter parents.
Yeah.
They're the ones that took the trophy that they got for showing up and how special they were, and they took it to the fucking extreme.
Yeah.
And that was, yes, my parents loved me, and they were there all the time for me, but they didn't make sure that I had the best of everything and that my schooling was right, or that if my teacher, you know, was mean to me, they didn't stand up for me at school, they didn't do... And I'm going to ensure that my kid and that... They became the fucking helicopter parents, or those early millennials. The Gen Z now, which are almost two generations really removed from us Xers, they're the ones that are going to bring the pendulum back. But what they
fucking hope
so. And here's why. Here's why. It's because the Xers are now the grandparents. And as grandparents, we don't give a fucking shit. So here, kid, have a shit ton of sugar. Let's go trick-or-treating. Hey, you want a gun? I got a gun. Let's go shoot a gun. Don't tell your mom, okay?
Get on your bike. Go outside.
We are going to give the Gen Z, right, the childhood that we have because their parents won't let them. So as grandparents, we're going to show them what our Halloweens were like, what our Christmases were like, what it was like after school for us. We're going to show them that the crazy danger shit is the fun shit because they're not our kids now, right? We don't give a shit.
That's why I've always said uncle material, bro, right here.
Right,
because,
here.
Again, we get to do that exact thing.
Right.
With our friends and our relatives, it's like we get to go up and be like, dude, let me show you some shit your dad ain't going to be okay
but
with.
That's where our job isn't done. And circling all the way back to do I think that Halloween is over or will it come back? We now have the experience and the lack of responsibility to a generation of youth to basically bring them behind the curtain and go, you want to see some cool shit?
All right. So on that note, I will also have to state this too. With that in mind, one of the things that I'm worried about is that the generation of helicopter parents have also breeded an overly self-aware PC child. And when they get older, they'll do the things that people have been doing for a long time and saying, well, Halloween's a pagan holiday and I don't really like to observe that and I don't think it's really good for my child to be into that. And that kind of mentality I see more often than I would love. I would love to see that disappear wholeheartedly, but at the same time, I understand where they're coming from. And I get the notion, and again, it's the same argument that people have against Christmas. It's like, well, it's a Christian holiday. If you're not a Christian, then you don't get to celebrate it. Well, that's not very fair for everyone. Bullshit. You want to put up a dead tree in your house and decorate it with sparkly shit? Fucking do it. Has nothing to do with it at this point. The beauty thing about, like, Halloween and Christmas is, and this is what I always gathered from them, if you're not a Christian, or you're not a Jew, or you're anything, if you just want to do that so you can enjoy having a fun time with your family and writing an excuse to see the rest of your family, fucking do it. That's what the holiday's supposed to be about. It's not supposed to be about, well, we worship this fat man in a red suit, but Jesus was also born on this day. It's like, no, we can just completely undermine both of those fucking things, and it is a valid excuse to get together with your family and be fucking thankful for the people you love. And if you want to give them a gift, cool, this is your excuse, man. This is your top tier. Nobody's going to judge you for wrapping it up and saying, Merry Christmas.
Here's why I'm not as worried about that generation of parents pushing all of their PC, vegan, tolerance, responsibility,
I hate you so much.
Appropriation stuff, right? Look, is there a place for all that?
Oh, yeah.
There is.
Yeah.
A little bit.
And everybody's entitled to their notions of what they consider to be right and wrong.
Right.
I give them that.
Believe what you want to believe.
Totally.
Don't force it on me. And if we lived by that, Jesus Christ, we'd be fucking great. Believe what you want to believe, and don't force it on me. And if it makes you happy, and if it makes the world a better place, then fucking do it.
No right? sense in being a poopy pants if everybody's having a good time.
Right. But I also believe in this, and history will prove this. Every generation has to find their own identity, and the easiest way to begin to find the identity is to rebel against the generation before you. And how do you rebel in a world that is so PC, that is so locked down? Well, you rebel by breaking against that PC code, by
True.
Venturing out and trying to find your own answers and not believe what you're taught or told.
I have one follow-up question as well. So in this day and age, you know, we all grew up with horror movies that pushed our boundaries of what we thought was scary, right?
Yeah.
And as time has gone on, everyone continues to try to push those boundaries to try to see what actually scares people. Do you think in this time frame that we have literally gotten to a plateau of what we can do for scary?
No.
You know, in the respects of it's like haunted houses. Like, I got super excited. My 30th birthday, I was super fucking stoked because we were going to go to do the Fright Town thing. Never done it in my entire life. Always saw it as a kid, wanted to do it, never got a chance. So my 30th birthday, we went to Fright Town. I'll be honest with you, I would measure the level of scary in that place to, like, the haunted mine ride at Oaks Park.
Yeah.
It was horribly neutered. For being boasted up as much as it was fun. Don't get me wrong. It was fun. It was enjoyable. I was there with a bunch of people I loved, and it was good times. Scary it was not. Even momentarily depressing,
well,
not even close.
Look at it from this standpoint.
It was pretty basic.
You have a haunted house. People come in. But for insurance and legal reasons, you can't really go over the top scary because someone may walk in with a heart condition they don't know about.
True.
Or, you know, flashing lights can trigger, you know, seizures and
True.
Shit. So you can't really do the type of thing you want
but
to
in
do.
But in fairness, there are haunted mazes and shit like that that offer the disclaimer at the beginning of the maze saying if you have a heart condition or if you are prone to seizures via flashing lights, you should not come in here. Enter at your own risk at that point. And so there are stuff out there. And
yeah.
The last haunted maze I went to, which was fucking a long time ago, they pushed the limits. Like, they had a dude walk out of the maze with a fucking chainsaw going, a real chainsaw. A car turned on and pulled forward like fucking 5 feet when you didn't see it there to begin with. They were trying to push the boundaries of what was scary. Even that, for me, It was better than Frighttown by a measure of magnitude, but it was still kind of basic. It was kind
but
of
you're also,
nothing.
You're also conditioned.
Yes.
And that's the thing. Yeah. Are we in a generation now that is so conditioned to scary movies, horror movies, horror
because it's,
genre types
you have to,
that we've hit a plateau?
No, because you have to take it on an individual case-by-case basis.
Okay, so...
The scare tolerance for someone like you may be much higher. There may be people out there that could go into Frighttown
and leave crying?
Terrified.
That's fair.
Here's the analogy that I need to make about this, and I'm going to equate it to beer. I love craft beer. I was in Portland, really, as we saw Bridgetown and Portland Brewing. And
you like a good dark beer.
Well, but here's the thing, is I became legal drinking age just as Portland was
started
dipping its toe into craft beer. There were only three at the time, really. It was Portland, Bridgeport, and Widmer. And I remember...
Well, McMenamin's was brewing at that time, weren't they?
No, they weren't open yet for another about 5 years.
God damn, you're old.
Yeah, I am.
Yeah. Sorry, bro.
Did you see the knife when he stuck it in? Or did you just...
No. It happens to all of us. So
I'll be there.
Have fun,
I'll be there.
Youngin.
I'll enjoy that.
And I remember when I was drinking before I turned 21, because, come on, we all did.
Absolutely.
We drank whatever we could get our hands on, and usually...
Good old MD 2020.
Right. It was the MD 2020, or if it was beer, it was like a half rack of fucking Hams or Coors Light or whatever.
Miller.
We could
MGD.
MGD. Or back then, too, it was... Ice beers were big, too, so it was Ice House and...
Oh, yeah.
And, Bones Farm.
Keystone and that bullshit. Right? And
Faustus.
It was whatever we could shoulder tap and get.
Oh, yeah.
So now I turn 21, and all of a sudden, I'm at a real bar, and they've got this tap of this thing called Hefeweizen, and they fucking put an orange slice in it, and goddamn, this is like highbrow. This is, what the fuck is this? This is awesome. And then I started trying all the different selections of all of these craft beers that... And then eventually went down the path of, well, I really started liking more of the malties than the hoppies, and, you know, down to the darkers when I was introduced to those. And till now, you know, I look for dark, heavy, strong beers and ales. Those are my favorite. Even during the summer, if I can find something.
Yeah. Good coffee beer?
8.5% to 11%, right? And so dark, light won't go through the glass, right? I'm in. Don't you ever fucking serve me a Budweiser.
No.
If Bud is the only beer you have on tap, I'm going to be drinking hard alcohol or I'm going to be drinking soda, because I don't drink fucking Budweiser.
Well, it tastes like piss.
What's the number one beer in America?
Budweiser.
Okay. Now, if you're going to a Fright House...
Wait a minute. It's PBR, but...
But you know what I mean.
That's being honest.
It's PBR, it's Budweiser, it's Coors, it's mass-produced bullshit piss water that America loves as, quote, beer. You are the same way when it comes to anything scary, dude.
I'm a hard alcoholic when it comes to anything scary, apparently, because honestly, it's like...
You're the Irish... When it comes to anything scary, okay? You are beyond hard alcoholic. You now look at it as a national point of pride. How strong.
How fucking scary can you be, lad?
Your fucking liver is, right? You call, I'll show you fucking scary. And I think that's what you've run into is you.
At the end of this night, you'd be pissing your pants.
You personally have been so desensitized.
Yeah.
That you are now a really difficult scare. When it comes to comedy, and especially stand-up comedy, because I'm not a comedian, but I have written comedy and produced comedy and done comedy stuff now for most of my professional career.
Right.
I'm a hard laugh. It has to be something really special to make me laugh when it comes to stand-up or sketch comedy or parodies or whatever. Most of it is like, that was clever, or meh. You have to fucking go there now when it comes to comedy. Before his downfall, Louis C.K. had hit his stride. There's a certain amount of misery you have to have endured, I believe, before you can turn it into incredibly golden comedy. And he had reached a point in his life and his life experiences where his misery was so high and he was turning it into comedy gold. And if you look back at the greats, Carlin lived a miserable life. Pryor lived a miserable life.
Robin Williams.
Williams was haunted by depression and his own demons. Miserable life, and they turn it into brilliant comedy. And I can relate to those people because they have taken their comedy to such a level.
Well, and in fairness,
but the average stand-up comedian now, if I were to go to an average stand-up comedian night, I'm going to be going,
fair enough.
That was clever. But it's like you with the saturation. Has the world got to a point where nothing scares us anymore?
Is it that they're just being neutered on purpose for the reasons mentioned by James? You know, is it so much so to the point where we're too afraid to actually push the boundaries of fear?
I think as far as movies go...
Because of everybody.
I'm going to say as far as movies go, yes.
To some degree, yeah.
The lengths that movie makers will go to as far as their scary movies is really neutered, not by them, but by the motion picture rating system.
That's fair, but at the same time, if it's rated NC-17, I want to see it more than I want to see it raw.
Look at it this way.
I mean?
If you take movies from the 80s, horror movies from the 80s,
which there was a lot of hard garbage, but
the
shit
that they were able to do.
Oh, yeah.
You'll never see on screen
bullshit.
Now.
And here is my perfect example.
I call shenanigans.
Because in the 2000s and the 2010s, we got a brand new genre called fucking torture porn. Eli Roth did shit on screen in Hostel that was far and away worse than any of the slasher... The slasher flicks that we grew up with...
Cannibal Holocaust.
Yeah, thank you.
But that was 1970?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't think that it's about the rating system, and I think that the big movie companies are still looking for what's going to make the most money. And right now, horror movies are not the thing.
Yeah.
If for some reason it became the thing, that's where they put their money.
Oh yeah.
Right now, what's the thing? It's superheroes.
Superheroes.
So all the money's going to superheroes. If you go down to the independent level. There is some fucking terrifying shit being done in the independent horror
level.
Have
you guys seen...
The problem is, where do you find it?
Well, true.
Sometimes the Netflixes, sometimes the on-demand streaming. Sometimes they'll do screenings with little independent horror movie festivals here.
I will say, though, on that note, one of the movies that I will say I will hold up as a modern, you know, horror movie, the movie Hereditary. I don't know if you guys have seen it yet.
I haven't seen it, but I haven't seen it.
I heard
it is fucking amazing.
Yeah.
I won't say it's terrifying. It definitely has some fucked up imagery in it, and I think it's beautiful because it's not torture porn. It is just a beautiful horror story. And it's built around such a beautiful concept where they no longer said, okay, well, this is the monster in the woods, and he's coming to get you. No, no, no. This movie, the monster is built into the family. And how the family deals with the shit that happens to them makes it that much scarier. And then the fucking payoff at the end is so worth it. It has a beautiful fucking punchline to it. And that's the new modern horror movies that I'm excited about seeing more of. And Hereditary, I will put up there, is probably by far one of my favorite recent year movies of a horror standard that isn't, you know... that's kind of psychologically creepy, or that's a lot of torture porn. It's none of those. It's actually pushing the boundary again and saying, okay, if we want to really scare people, we need to make them feel like they're in this shit, and they understand it. And when it happens, holy fuck.
And I think the other thing, too, is, and I think every generation has to ask this, especially if you're creating horror content, right, is... What scares people now? What's the most terrifying
Trump.
Thing now? But you know what? And here's
the Cheeto!
Thing. Here's the thing.
It's the night Trump
it's
knocked.
It's not necessarily a horror movie, but the concept...
Let's make a great deal.
The Purge, the three movies, the Purge, and then the series that they've created. there is something absolutely terrifying of that, because the purge was all, it's not just that you've got 12, 18 hours where crime is suspended, right?
Right.
Where everything is legal, including murder.
Right.
But then it's brought around by what is considered an allegory for the modern Republican Party. That there's a political side to this. That, and so when you say Trump is terrifying, fucking A, it is.
It is horrible.
So how do you start getting into political terror? How do you take that and create a genre out of it? You know, one of the things that popped up that was kind of scary, that was a genre, were these what I'm going to call these sensory movies. There was The Quiet Place. There was The Bird Box.
Yeah.
There were a couple of them where it was about, you could not use your senses.
There was one movie called, I think, Blindness or something like that with Julianne Moore. That one, I appreciated what they were trying to do, but it ended up just being more of a psychoanalyst of how society will break down if all these people fall victim to this certain circumstance. Not great. Bird Box, fucking amazing. Loved the concept. I will say there is something that bugs me about not being able to see the monster, in the respects that it's like, it's the H.P. Lovecraft irritation that I get, where it's the unimaginable horror. It's like, fuck you. Explain it to me. I'm the audience, goddammit. I should be able to see this shit.
Here's the thing, though, is they did release captures of what they... Because the monster was in there and it was edited out.
Right.
And they released the screen captures.
Okay.
You're better off not seeing it.
Fair enough.
It would have been unbelievably underwhelming or so confusing that you would have walked away and went, really?
All right, that's
the
fair.
Fucking monster?
That's so fair. But A Quiet Place, we got the monster.
Yes.
And it was beautiful.
Yes.
Because it was a validation of their fear.
And honestly, I mean, The Quiet Place really, I think, was the first one to start the genre. It was the standard bearer for everything that came after. Blindness, I think it fits, but it's not quite what they were doing.
It was more of a drama than a horror movie by any stretch.
But I think we have to ask ourselves, what terrifies us now? What is it that we are most afraid of? You know, it was easy back in the Universal movie monster days.
Well, it's because there was a monster in the woods. It was the unknown creature that dwells in the darkness.
Right, and
but they were also based off, you know, really old stories. I mean,
right.
And Dracula, that story had been around for 200 years.
Fucking Frankenstein, the same, you know?
You look at when these movies came out, we were still a nation of immigrants. These stories were probably, these legends were still being told around family
the
tables.
The Wolfman, the Mummy.
And they were brought in because it was culturally part of their culture.
I'll give it up to the creature from the Black Lagoon was probably more of an original thought than any of the others.
Right, but all the others had been established at that point, and now we're looking at, okay, America loves their monsters. Let's create and give them more monsters,
but
which then became the B movie,
right?
The schlocky B movie,
the chopping mall.
You know, talking about things that scare us right now. On the recommendation of our good friend Big Jim, I watched the Child's Play reboot.
Did you know?
It was actually surprisingly good.
Now, I will give it a college try. On your recommendation.
It took out the whole, killer in the possessed doll.
Right.
Which, for me, was like, oh. But at the same time, it replaced it with fucking technology.
Killer AI.
Yeah. Here's an AI that learns and becomes emotionally attached to you to the point where it, because there's no safety protocol, it doesn't know right from wrong. It just knows it wants to be with you.
Right.
And it will do anything to make sure it's with you.
Okay, that's fair.
And that got really fucking scary. And then the fact that it is an AI and, you know, a computer, it's tapping into other machines.
Right.
You know?
And I think...
And the whole driverless car...
But I think that that's one of those things where, again, every generation has to look at what terrifies them. We're so reliant on technology right now that either technology becoming too smart,
right,
which leads to the Terminator, which, you know, terrified us in the early days.
That fucking documentary, I still hold that up as you know, this is a great beware of technology.
True. And again, it's one of those things
people
too,
say
where
it's a great movie. Fuck that.
When I first started learning about like story writing and shit like that, they'd always posed that there are two types of horror stories. And they always are roughly the same. It's the creature in the dark that you talk about is looming behind you and always watching.
Boogeyman.
Or it's the evil within. It's the monster within. So that's how we got our serial killers, our slashers. Those were creatures that used to be men, and the evil within them distorted them so much that they started enacting their vengeance upon others. And again, we get movies like that all over the place. Look at Silence of the Lambs. The only reason that movie even qualifies as a horror movie is because of the vile nature of Hannibal Lecter. So we had the creatures in the dark, and then we had the creatures on the inside. Would you fuck me?
See.
I'd fuck me.
Would.
I'd fuck me hard.
With a lot of lotion.
I'm going to bookmark this.
check your drip pan first.
Would you fuck me?
But what a great lullaby.
But seriously.
I have that song.
What scares you now? What really terrifies you now?
Well, and that's just it. The things that terrify me would make shitty movies.
Are you sure?
Well, you know, financial ruin and, you know, just losing a loved one is enough to scare me. But again, that ends up being more like a drama than anything else because we've had those.
I'll give you this.
The long walk and shit.
Financial
you know?
Ruin leads to civilization collapse. What happens? The dregs of society take power.
I still think we need to have a Fallout movie. Because I think, honestly, for me, that was one of those games.
It was called Mad Max.
Better. But in the respects, the thing about Fallout 3 particularly was there was such a feeling of loss when you were in that game. A feeling of dread just overwhelming you. Like, everything from the sky was that gray, green haziness. Everything was desolate. And one of the things that stood out for me was I was just, you know, meandering through, wandering around, and I came across a campground, and I saw skeletons and plates, the car, and the shit set up, and it broke my fucking heart. It was a video game, but my sense of loss for just that idea, like, these people were having a great day. They were having fun doing their camping trip, and the world just ate a collective shit. And there was nothing you could do.
So the movie you're describing now is The Road.
To some degree, and I liked The Road for that.
Yeah.
I liked The Road for that. I wish there were better aspects of it.
But that's not so much scary. It's
duress.
Yeah, that's isolation at its worst.
Right. But I think Fallout, the beauty thing about it is a fantasy story wrapped up in a modern apocalypse.
And again, I have to say that your perception of The Road would change if you were a parent. The Road is fucking terrifying.
That's fair.
If you view it through the eyes of truly of a parent and it's you and your own kid, because now everything is a threat to your child and it,
that's fair.
It is fucking scary.
That's fair.
But what happened? I think that you're right. I mean, I think that loss on a grand scale. And I think we went through the apocalyptic phase movies,
yeah,
right?
We didn't do very good, though.
No,
we could have done a lot better.
No, because the reason we didn't do well is because they were set up as action films
right.
and not horror films.
Right. Right. And that's where I think we should try to move it, is take it in the direction of horror, because one of the things about Fallout that makes it so scary is the mutations. The creatures that were born of this apocalypse that are now trying to actively kill you on a regular basis. That's where the duress and fear comes in, but the overwhelming dread of the circumstance you find yourself in just adds to it. It takes your fear and just makes you want to fucking die, but you still have to survive.
I think there could be something done. There's a lot of dystopian future movies and shows out right now. Handmaid's Tale, for one.
Yeah.
The Hunger Games. Mm. There's platforms with that whole dystopian future that I think if you twist just a few things, you could have some really good scary movies. There's also the genre of the the horror in science. What was it? I want to say it was like A Cure for All Things or something like that. It was really recent, but it was like this guy goes to this health club and they keep him there.
That I don't know.
I'll have to look it up, but it was...
But I mean, modern technology movies.
It was really good with the, you know, we have this health spa, and we're going to give you this special, you know, drink, and it's going to, you know, take care of all your ailments, but you can never leave. And then you find out that they're giving you this stuff so they can harvest your organs.
Yay!
And I will say, I mean, I some of them are hit or miss, but some of them are brilliant.
Right.
I will say, in the technology realm and the cautionary tale of dystopia.
Transcendent.
Features, no, the British series Black Mirror has had, again, some hit or miss. Some of those stories are terrifying.
A Cure for Wellness was what it was called.
That's it. Okay, yeah.
But some of those stories are terrifying because it takes things that we are now very used to, you know, certain technological advances, and it takes them to what they deem as the eventual bad end
right.
of certain trends in today's society. And I think Black Mirror does a great job of showing us how scary our reliance on things, or there's one that is kind of an American Idol taken to the extreme. The winners live, and those that don't, they're either executed or they're put in servitude.
I think there's a Netflix show or a movie where it's like that. It's like you have to The kids, they go through school, but at a certain age, they have to pass this certain test, and if they don't, they're dead.
The 6%.
I think, yeah.
It's called the 6%, and that's it. It was a population control thing it's foreign, it's overdubbed. I want to say it's filmed in Brazil, so
gotcha.
It's in Portuguese, and the planet has suffered some sort of
cataclysm,
right? Yeah. And it can only support 6% of the population.
Okay.
So as there's no restriction on childbirth.
You just got to be prepared. You might lose your child.
Every child at a certain age has to go through this series of psychological and physical tests until they're weeded down to the 6% that are worthy
right.
of joining the population. And in its own way, it's terrifying because of the realism, because you understand where it
right.
goes. But does that count as horror to you? Is that horror, or is it...
That falls under thriller. That falls under, because again, I've always
but again,
held,
see your threshold for horror.
Right, right. But again, my thought process is I've always held thrillers and horror in two entirely different genres. I know they're supposed to be almost one and the same, but for me, they've always been different.
I'm with you. I think there is a difference
yeah.
between thrillers and horrors.
Because at this rate, it's like one of my biggest beefs I've had in recent years is when people refer to Stephen King as the master of horror. No, bullshit. He's the master of thrillers. I'll give him that. Because he can make you feel duress. He can make you feel uncomfortable because of a certain circumstance that's coming along. Look at The Shining. The Shining? Not a horror movie, in my opinion. It's a good thriller, but it is not a horror movie. It is a circumstance that bases itself in hard reality that could literally happen to anyone. For that reason alone, that's a thriller.
But couldn't you argue, based off your own thing 10 minutes ago, that that's the monster within? That any one of us has the potential
True.
For the monster within. So by that definition, it's horror.
But that's why I've always separated the two, because for me, horror has always meant something special. Something beyond normal. Something
supernatural.
And I'm going
to argue
that
it has to be paranormal or
to
supernatural.
To some degree.
Then The Shining has that, because there is the supernatural element of the kid seeing the ghosts, essentially.
To some degree, yes. And I'll give you that. But at the same time... That almost falls under delusions. again, I know it's weak, and I know it's probably I stand alone on this little island, but that to me isn't enough to justify it being a horror movie, because all he saw was passive. The real danger that he was in was from his father. So to me, it's kind of like the ghost in your house. So like, you got a movie where the character walks in the door and there's a ghost standing in the corner behind them, just looking malice as shit. They grab their mail, turn around and walk back out the door. What the fuck was that for? They didn't see it. I saw it, but I'm the audience. I don't count in this. If they're not fucking scared, I have no reason to be scared. So for that, that's bullshit. That's a delusion. They might have thought they felt something back there, but the audience got to see it and they didn't. So for me, that's bullshit.
I think this is just your tolerance for...
Yeah. Again, shock value...
Tolerance.
And stuff like that, it bugs me when it doesn't involve the main character. If the people in the movie aren't actually feeling the fear that the audience is feeling, to me that's a complete and total bullshit.
But then again, in The Shining, the kid was feeling the fear from seeing the delusions. So you're invalidating your own argument.
Well, no, and that's
Shining.
What I'm saying, though, is he was under no real duress from them.
The kid?
Yeah.
Yes, he was. He was terrified.
Well, terrified is one thing, but I could be scared of your wallpaper and it would just be okay.
But that's
okay.
Still, if you're terrified, wouldn't that be duress?
To some degree, but again, thriller, not horror. Again, I know it's weak and I know it's light, but that's how I've always dictated the two difference. Like, under the dome.
No. There's nothing wrong with how you perceive it.
Right.
I'm just saying that from a mainstream audience point of view, your arguments on The Shining not being horror, you've invalidated like three times.
But again, the reason being is because when I look at the movie at face value, they tried to use the kid's ability to see these ghosts to scare the audience. He was scared, sure. But was he ever in real danger? By the end of the story, no. The only real physical danger he was in was from his stark raving lunatic father.
But at the point that the father went stark raving lunatic, he became the monster. And in that case, he became the monster out there. So it wasn't
he was still the monster within.
Okay.
And that's what I'm saying. It's like,
but it's still...
It's weak on The Shining particularly. But again, it's like I would count things from Stephen King as a horror movie. It. Perfect example.
Okay.
Because you have a supernatural creature with unknown origins who is actively killing people. To me, that qualifies as horror by just sheer default. I don't even have to look too far into it because that makes sense to me. It is the monster in the dark.
I would then argue that The Shining is more of a psychological horror rather than a thriller. Physical horror.
I would say it's a psychological thriller than a horror. But again, that's how I rank things. You know, it's like Hereditary, for instance, I'd quantify as horror because everything that goes on in that movie is witnessed by the people involved, and what happens to them, because I'm not going to spoil too much, is very real.
So by your definition, then, anything supernatural
falls closer to horror than anything else, because it's hard to have
again,
a supernatural thrill.
Again, you just invalidated.
Well, no. And hear me out, because if it's supernatural, it's something beyond a thriller. Because a thriller is the human condition. You know, we're experiencing this, and it happens on a daily basis. We're just being told a story where it's the human condition. For me, horror stands outside that because it is beyond human. It is above human. And, you know, even things like Split,
Wait. Not 10 minutes ago, you said...
I love how he likes to just piece me apart.
I'm trying to understand because, again, you invalidate yourself your own argument, and it's mind-boggling. I get where you're coming from.
Oh, now he agrees with me.
I didn't say agree. I said I understand where you're coming from. But not 10 minutes ago, you said that if you're watching a movie and a guy comes into his house and there's a ghost in the corner,
but
he doesn't see it,
it's bullshit.
But it's supernatural.
But it's invalid because there is nothing I should be worried about. The idea is I'm supposed to be watching this movie from the point of view of the main character, whoever that may be. If they're not scared, why the fuck should I be? At this rate, you guys
it's
just put this in there.
It's tension building.
Yeah, but it's weak. It is weak because when you show them that, if it had just taken 10 seconds for them to turn around and see it and go, what the fuck? And it disappears. Sold. Done. I love it. Thank you. That's all I wanted. Insidious was perfect about this. Every time the creature shows up, somebody gets terrified. Not everybody sees it, but somebody gets terrified. And for that, it's like fucking beautiful. I love it. Every aspect of that. It's when they try to do that move where they're trying to scare the audience more than the main character. To me, that bugs me. And for that reason alone, it invalidates it as anything above an audience delusion. Because if they're not scared, I have no reason to be scared. You know, The Exorcist, the thing about it was, is every time that face popped up, somebody kind of noticed.
No.
That's the thing.
No. Yes. No. Every time a face popped up, that was for the audience.
The lights flicker down, face pops up, and she gets a kind of a weird notion.
Because the lights just popped down. There's a scene where they're in looking at her, and there's a face on the wall that fades in and fades out. No one notices, yet the audience is terrified.
Well, not me, but that's fair. But again,
but
at
again,
the same
your
time...
Tolerant, your but, scare but, tolerance is so
wait,
high...
Wait. That's what I'm getting to, though. The Exorcist, one of the reasons it quantifies as a horror movie is because of the supernatural effects. Now, granted, all the doctors in that movie try to say, well, this is just a problem with the brain, you know, it's seizures. But by the end of it, you know better. You know better because everything that is happening to this poor girl is being witnessed by Sharon or her mother or Father Karras or all these people involved have seen the shit that she's done.
Okay, so in order for a horror movie to scare you...
Well, to be good.
Basically what you're saying is that you need to be more invested into...
The character.
The character. Mm-hmm. So if the character... So you're thriving... So in order for a movie to meet your scary needs, the main characters have to be terrified.
Essentially, yeah. Because otherwise, it's pointless.
So you just have... Your investment in the character is what matters.
Yes, exactly. And that's one of those things where it's like, right now, if there was a ghost standing behind me, scared the shit out of you, that would be something. But if there's just a ghost sitting behind me while I'm watching TV, it's like, this is not a horror movie. This is just stupid. Because, again, stuff like that, I hate it when... And that's on the filmmakers. Not so much the story, but that's on the filmmakers. Because I know that they try to get those shock values out of the audience. Because a lot of people are scared by that stuff.
It's also tension
building. It is
building
tension.
Yeah.
But at the same time, if you build that tension within the character, you'll notice that it resonates stronger with an audience. Because if they can adhere with the main character and they're getting terrified by this weird shit they're seeing, the audience gets more terrified. If you're just flashing shit for the audience and the main character just near, you might get a shock or two, but it's not going to be as good.
Yeah, but the argument could be made that you build up all this tension with your main character and show the audience nothing, and the audience is falling flat.
Well, that's what happened in Bird Box. All the tension was in the main characters. All of the tension were in the people who saw it and died because of it, one way or the other. That's why that works. We, as the audience, never saw what they saw. And that's why it works. It still bugs me. But I accept it because that's the nature of the creature that they built. So I understand that. And again, Sandra Bullock's duress throughout this whole thing is what drives the fear level. You know, she doesn't understand why her sister fucking careens off the road trying to kill herself after seeing something that she didn't see. You know, and all these people doing the exact same thing. That's terrifying because you don't understand it. But you know something unnatural is happening around you. So she learns how to deal with it by, you know, the blindfold and coaching the kids through this shit and becoming very strict about how it works. That was a better build-up than showing a ghost in the corner of somebody's apartment. That's what I'm saying.
See, for me, I'm the opposite way. If you're building up all this tension but not giving me any sort of why are these people getting scared, I get bored.
Well, again, at least in Bird Box, you had deaths. Unnatural
again,
deaths.
But to me, that's just, oh, so you're overcompensating because these people couldn't handle shit?
Well, that's
I need
an awful lot of people.
I need the, but see, I'm the opposite. I need the tension building.
That's fair. And that's
because
fair.
For me, it's like, okay, there's a ghost in the corner. I know this main character is going to get killed. How and when?
That's fair.
How long before the ghost makes its move, you know?
And I get that. And don't get me wrong, I know you're more of the majority on this than I am, in the respects that they keep doing those types of film where they're building the audience tension more than the character tension. So I know I'm outnumbered on that one, which is fine. But again, for me, what makes a good horror movie is the character investment of fear. Mm-hmm. And honestly, that's why I love the movie Hereditary so much, is because they build the tension level within the characters. And to some point, you're not sure who the main star of this movie is. You know that the movie centers around this family, but each one of them is going through their own shit. And that builds such a beautiful set of tension, and you feel for every character in it. And then finally, once the big payoff happens, you're like, holy fuck, that was cool. And yeah. Totally.
See,
worth
I
it.
I would argue then that like a movie like Rosemary's Baby, which for its time was heralded as like the scariest movie out
there. What's wrong with his eyes?
All of this stuff is happening to Rosemary.
Exactly.
She's under duress the whole time.
Mm-hmm. And that's what makes that movie better than your average shit. I will not disagree with you. That movie is long and boring.
Nothing happens in that movie.
And the payoff is weak at best.
Yeah.
And again, I will completely agree with you on that. But again, that was time and place for what it is.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They actually did a remake of Rosemary's Baby, which actually was much more entertaining. Same story premise, a little bit different characters.
Zoe Saldana was in it, yeah.
Really a much more entertaining version of that story, in my opinion. And again, that's why I don't mind some remakes when they do it right. When you're taking something old and what I consider broken and making it better, I'm cool with that. When you're taking something that's not that old and really wasn't that broken and remaking it, that's when I get a little irritated. Child's Play, case in point.
No, I we had this discussion before. Child's Play, it didn't need to be done.
Mm-hmm.
But now after having seen it, I think it was a solid movie. I just wish that they hadn't put it Child's Play. I wish they'd...
Just... tried something different.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you could have kept...
Again,
like,
the story
the
very solid, yeah. And the characters were great and everything. I really enjoyed the movie. The only thing that really killed it for me was, like, this is not Child's Play.
Ta-da. Again, it's like The Exorcist. There's been many movies that have come out that were Exorcist-esque. You know, The Exorcism of Emily Rose, which, in fairness, was trying to do the retelling of Annalise Michel, the chick who basically foundation stoned The Exorcist as it is. Not a bad film for what it is. If you go in expecting The Exorcist, you're going to be horribly disappointed.
That's the court case one.
Yeah.
Okay, see, that I don't. That's not a horror movie. That's a great fucking drama thriller.
To some
with
degree.
Some supernatural stuff in it.
See, but I would honestly argue that that's what makes it more horror than a thriller, is something supernatural happened to this girl. And the fact that they're in the courtroom trying to prove that by all these documentations, and then we get the flashbacks in, you know, real time, in and of itself speaks volumes to how supernatural shit is viewed in a normal society.
See, I would... Along with the Exorcist, I would argue that The Last Exorcist...
I still haven't watched it because, again, after so many movies called The Exorcist or, you know, The Beginning,
The
Dominion was good, but
it was
like,
the beauty of The Last Exorcist was that it's a found footage.
Okay.
But it's this guy who is essentially like he's world-renowned for being this great exorcist. But it starts out by this guy going, no, I'm a charlatan. All these exorcisms I've done, complete bullshit.
That's fair.
100%. So I'm going to do this last thing.
Exorcism.
I'm going to film the whole thing, and I'm going to show you exactly what I do, because this is it. I'm done. And it turns out that he ends up
with a real life. Ah, fuck!
And then it gets even worse, because at the end, it's like the person that's possessed is the result of a cult.
See, and I love that shit.
And it's fantastic. And it keeps you guessing the whole time. It's a great
I will have to watch it. If it's found sequel, footage, I'm going to have to watch it by myself because my wife doesn't do handycam.
The sequel is garbage.
Motion sickness.
Yep. But, yeah, the original is. And you know what? I might have it.
If you have it, I will borrow it and I will take it home and watch it.
I'll take a look. When we're done, which we should have been done like half an hour ago.
Probably. So at this rate, Halloween kicks all kinds of ass. Step up, you assholes.
Tell you what.
Get your fingers out of your ass.
We've got one more show. It'll air after Halloween, but we'll record before. We'll probably carry this on because one of our favorite subjects is scary shit.
Yeah.
So.
Love talking horror movies.
Yep.
I tend to be in the minority from time to time, but that's okay. Fuck you guys.
And with that, we say goodbye.
Bye. See, and I love that shit.
And it's fantastic. And it keeps you guessing the whole time. It's a great.
I will have to watch it. If it's found footage, I'm going to have to watch it by myself because my wife doesn't do handycam.
The sequel is garbage.
Motion sickness.
Yep. But, yeah, the original is. And you know what? I might have it.
If you have it, I will borrow it and I will take it home and watch it.
I'll take a look. When we're done, which we should have been done like half an hour ago.
Probably. So at this rate, Halloween kicks all kinds of ass. Step up, you assholes.
Tell you what.
Get your fingers out of your ass.
We've got one more show. It'll air after Halloween, but we'll record before. We'll probably carry this on because one of our favorite subjects is scary shit.
Yeah.
So.
Love talking horror movies.
Yep.
I tend to be in the minority from time to time, but that's okay. Fuck you guys.
And with that, we say goodbye.
Bye!
Thank you for listening to Not Another Podcast. There are so many places for you to find us outside of www.notanotherpodcast.com. For instance, you can find us on Facebook at Not Another Podcast. You can also find us on Tumblr at www.notanotherpodcast.tumblr.com. You can also find me, Samantha Stark, on Twitter at SamanthaStark3. And you can find James on Twitter as well under James Spooky, spelled with an I-E, not A-Y. And you wanted it, you asked for it, you got it. You can also find us now on iTunes under, you guessed it, Not Another Podcast. We'll talk to you soon. Peace out, Not Another Podcasters.